From Port Allegheny to Johnstown, Camp Hill to Ridgeway, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, did it have to end this way? The chaotic final days of America's war in Afghanistan have triggered a wide range of emotions. U.S. Representative Scott Perry joins our Capitol Watch crew for analysis of the foreign policy debacle. And infrastructure is a big topic these days, but Pennsylvania's approach to transportation policy is a dumpster fire. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Congressman Scott Perry and our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Two nurses with the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections have filed separate lawsuits against the Service Employees International Union, or SEIU, alleging union officials told them incorrect information while trying to get them to sign new membership applications designed to force them to pay dues to protect voting rights to which they were already entitled. The Fairness Center is representing the employees, and Center President Nathan McGrath said the suit, quote, alleges that union officials prioritized locking employees into dues payments over making sure union members got their voting rights, end quote. The cases are now before the Wayne County Court of Common Pleas. The U.S. Census Bureau has released results of the 2020 census. According to the Center Square, most Pennsylvania counties saw population declines over the past decade. The few exceptions were counties outside of population centers, including Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Harrisburg. Pennsylvania's population grew at a rate less than the national average, just 2.4% overall. Still, that put us at over 13 million residents and moved Pennsylvania ahead of Illinois to become the fifth most populous state in the country. Nationwide, the population of the United States grew by 7.4%, with most of the population gains in the Southwest, Texas, and Florida. A bit of economic good news, Pennsylvania's weekly unemployment claims have now dipped below pre-pandemic levels. A Wallet Hub analysis found claims for the first week in August came in at 16% below the same period in August of 2019 and 65% below last August when the pandemic was raging. Unemployment claims began to taper off as Governor Tom Wolf's economic and travel restrictions were lifted. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The rapid collapse of the American-backed government in Afghanistan triggered gut-wrenching scenes as thousands sought to flee the country. After 20 years of American blood and treasure, the Taliban are back in control. Carl Marrera from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is sitting in for David Taylor to host a Capitol Watch roundtable discussion. He is joined by Rebecca Euler of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by their guest, U.S. Representative Scott Perry. Carl?
Welcome to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, Carl Marrera, Vice President of Government Affairs for the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. And joining me in hosting this week is Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for being with us today.
Great to be here, Carl. Thank you.
This week, we have a bit of a different program as we step aside from our normal Harrisburg-focused state policy talk and instead look at United States foreign affairs as it pertains to what's happening in Afghanistan. Joining us on the program is a voice that you know very well, a very good friend of this program, Congressman Scott Perry.
Before we officially welcome the congressman to our program, it's important to understand his background as it relates to the conversation, and you'll see exactly why he was top of the list for our guest today. Congressman Perry began his military career in 1980. During his time in the service, he earned qualifications in almost every rotary wing aircraft in the Army inventory, which I think is just amazing, and instructor pilot training. Scott commanded at the battalion and brigade levels. Notably, Lieutenant Colonel Perry commanded the 2nd 104th General Support Aviation Battalion, which deployed to Iraq between 2009 and 10, and during which he flew 44 combat missions. In 2011, he was promoted to the rank of colonel and became the commander of the Fort Indian Town Gap National Training Site.
Congressman Perry was selected for promotion to the rank of Brigadier General in 2014 and was honored to serve as Assistant Division Commander in the 28th Infantry Division, the Army's oldest actively serving division. After serving his final military position as Assistant Adjutant General, he retired on the 1st of March in 2019 after nearly 40 years in uniform. He has also visited Afghanistan as a member of Congress in 2013. He's a graduate of the U.S. Army War College, where he earned a master's degree in strategic studies. Congressman Perry, thank you so much for joining us on Capitol Watch.
Well, it's great to be with you. And of course, I'm concerned about what happens under the dome there in Harrisburg, having served there and being a citizen of the great Commonwealth. Even though this program may be a little different, or like the topic for today might be a little different, it still all comes home right here to our great Commonwealth and the great citizens here in the mid-state and across the state.
Congressman, in the past, you, along with then-President Trump and many of the lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, advocated for pulling troops out of Afghanistan in a responsible, conditional, and phased approach. Obviously, that's not what's happening now. What happened and why?
Well, I think what happened was there was a change of leadership at the top. I mean, I know that that President Trump is criticized because for his approach regarding departure or ending the mission, so to speak, in Afghanistan, because it was delayed. But I would contend it was delayed because the Taliban, who are never true to their word, just remember this is a terrorist organization, didn't like the conditions. But that's the only way that you can do one of these things, is to have conditions and where your adversary, your enemy, meets the conditions up front, because the United States is always good to its word, and they were simply unwilling to do this. Now, I would also add that I think America and the Western world has earned the right to have a counterterrorism, an enduring counterterrorism mission in Afghanistan, and it harkens back to the reason we went there in the first place. This is a harbor for terrorism that affects not only the United States, but it has effects globally. That having been said, there was a change at the top. I think that President Biden saw this was a 70% issue, wanted what he saw was an easy win. And, because most Americans, like probably you, I don't know, but certainly I, believe that we have spent enough time, treasure, and blood, lost lives in Afghanistan. Here again, but there's a way to do these things. And what you're seeing right now is an abject failure, which quite honestly goes part and parcel to, in my mind, any time the left is put in charge of military operations anywhere around the globe. And I would just, I'll buttress that by reminding everybody about what happened when a Democrat Congress defunded the troops in contact. That means troops facing the enemy in Vietnam, and then what President Obama did in Iraq, couldn't be bothered with the status of forces agreement. Of course, we know what Hillary did in Benghazi, and now President Biden, who just simply in the middle of the night, our troops left Bagram Air Base without even telling the host country we were leaving, and the next morning the Taliban walked in and freed hundreds and thousands of prisoners that, I had viewed myself that were ISIS fighters, Taliban fighters, Al-Qaeda, people that want to attack the West. I mean, President Obama traded one of these prisoners from Gitmo for Bo Bergdahl and told America and told the world we would never see this prisoner on the battlefield again. And now there are many reports in the open source that he's one of the prime architects of the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan right now. The left simply cannot be trusted with the national security of the United States of America, including this administration.
Well, it seems that President Biden has been on the wrong side of history in nearly every foreign policy decision that he's faced. I mean, look at the latest, too. I mean, the issue of Afghanistan, but also on our southern border. I mean, these are by far his biggest mistakes that have the most impact to date. But he said, on the topic of Afghanistan, and I quote, "the buck stopped with me," end quote. But in that same speech, he then blamed everyone, not himself, for the current situation in Afghanistan. I mean, what can be done to mitigate the damage that's being done by the executive office when it comes to these foreign policy failures, both short term in getting Americans out of Afghanistan in the current situation, but then also long term?
Yeah, the short term focus needs to be getting the 10,000 to 15,000 American citizens out of Afghanistan safely. And of course, I must underscore that with the fact that when I say the 10 to 15,000, it's because we take that number from the administration. Not only do we not know what the exact number is, unfortunately, accountability is not the strongest suit of the administration. They don't know, which is completely unacceptable. And I also must characterize it with the fact that American citizens must be prioritized. The Biden administration keeps talking about American citizens and our partners. I don't want to see anybody from Afghanistan loaded onto a C-17 until all American citizens are out of Afghanistan first. So that's number one. Number two, long term. Look, we have to get to a point where Congress is involved in these long term actions and Congress is involved in declaring wars, as opposed to allowing an executive branch to start with an action to safeguard a country, which is sometimes necessary, and it certainly was necessary after 9/11 with President Bush responding to the Taliban, Osama bin Laden, and the terrorists located in Afghanistan. But it should never have gone on for 20 years. I would contend that once Osama bin Laden was taken off the battlefield 10 years ago, that was really the absolute time that we should have extricated ourselves responsibly from Afghanistan, left the counterterrorism mission there, and moved on with our lives and saved the lives of all the Americans that have perished over there over the last 10 years, and all the treasure and credibility that's been taken over the last 10 years as well.
Well, you're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, Carl Moreira, and joining me is Rebecca Euler of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Congressman Scott Perry. We're talking about the current situation in Afghanistan, how we got here, and what is to come.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the 10 to 15,000 U.S. citizens that we think are in Afghanistan right now that we don't know how they're going to get out. And that needs to be the top priority for sure. But I also wanted to talk a little bit about human rights. We've all seen unthinkable images of the government takeover in the streets of Kabul, especially concerned about women's rights, children. And we're wondering if this sounds like history repeating itself, like it did, in previous Afghanistan examples and in 1996. What do you expect in the coming months under Taliban rule?
What can the United States do about it? Boy, sure, not a lot at this point. We are very war weary. We have expended a lot of money. And, I hate to say this way as a person who's been honored to wear the uniform for many years. We walked out in the middle of the night and handed over the some of the most sophisticated and capable military weaponry to essentially goat herders who have run the most capable and best equipped military in the world out of their country in the matter of a couple days. Now, again, I must separate this from those who wear the uniform, the troops. And the people, the men and women that wear the boots, they are not at fault for this. They always perform magnificently as they're expected to. This all goes to the suits, whether it's President Biden, the commander in chief, the individual brass at the Pentagon that's either called the shots or not, Intel Agency, Department of State. And we need to get to the bottom of that. That absolutely, there needs to be bipartisan, bicameral hearings to understand how this failure occurred. Was it a failure in the intelligence community? Did the president get bad advice? Did the president ignore good advice? We need to know because, A, we don't want to keep repeating these failures, which I outlined in the beginning of the program, but B, there needs to be accountability. You simply cannot have the credibility lost, the lives lost, the equipment lost, the tax dollars wasted, 20 years of fighting for essentially nothing, and have everybody else involved be able to point the finger at somebody else and everybody walk away, and only the American citizen, our credibility, and those who have sacrificed greatly bear the burden. That is simply and completely and wholly unacceptable.
Congressman, I did a little bit of time travel and went back into your archives and looked at a press release that you put together in 2013 when you came back from Afghanistan as a part of a congressional visit. And you predicted the future, unfortunately. And one of the things, though, that you said in that press release is that an artificial withdrawal from Afghanistan could also destabilize countries in the region, such as Pakistan and India, both of which are nuclear powers, end quote. Enter the ever-shifting geopolitical environment that we're in at present. And what does a Taliban rule in Afghanistan do for foreign policy adversaries such as China, Russia, and Iran as well, in addition to the possible destabilization of the areas that you identified some 10 years ago?
Yeah, certainly wide-scale destabilization, potentially civil war in Afghanistan right now, understanding that there are mass protests in some of the outlying cities regarding the Taliban. So we have that to deal with, and nuclear powers that are adversaries to begin with, who will both play in Afghanistan. But then worldwide implications are profound, especially with China's longtime involvement in Afghanistan and as an adversary. And as I would remind everybody, not that we say so, but because China says so, they consider the United States, the Chinese Communist Party considers the United States their enemy. They want to be the global leader, and they want to diminish completely the role of the United States in that regard. And so, unfortunately, I think they are smiling with glee right now at what's happening to the United States in Afghanistan, and they are going to do whatever they can to promote our failures there.
So you talked a little bit about just there about U.S. weakness abroad, which is a major issue. But how about you had mentioned the impact of this crisis on U.S. credibility, which I think is a slightly different issue. How do you think the credibility of the U.S., you know, suffering here is also going to affect our foreign policy and our allies abroad?
Well, of course, allies are going to look at what's happening here, and our word is going to be in question again. I just think it's unfathomable that we pulled up stakes from Bagram Air Base, or also includes our ability to provide air support to the Afghan army, which we pledged to them even as we withdrew. If you're a foreign government and you're looking at the credibility, the good word of the United States, and you're trying to work some deal, whether it's a security arrangement or whether it's an economic arrangement, I think it just shakes the foundation of the negotiator on behalf of the United States to reach an agreement, because other governments will say, well, see here, you didn't keep your word here. As a matter of fact, you left in the middle of the night, and look what's happened. It's been essentially a whole country. The government has been disorderly changed. So I think the credibility in that regard, of course, our credibility as a military power, which is, look, diplomacy really only works as long as there's a threat of credible military force if necessary. I don't know what to say as a person who was honored to wear the uniform and loves the country and what the country stands for and our capabilities as a military power. We never want to use it, but it has to be there to be used. But if we have shown ourselves to be incapable of using it effectively, if you're one of these adversaries, they just shake their heads, shrug their shoulders, and say, well, I don't see a lot of effectiveness there. We're just going to go do what we want to do, and what are you going to do about it? That's the circumstance we have left ourselves in at this point, based on these actions, in my opinion.
Congressman, we only have another minute and a half left, but just really quickly, to the folks that are listening, what should be the next thing that the United States federal government does to try to rectify this situation?
Well, look, clearly this is a catastrophe, and you can't unring the bell once it's been rung. That's just the reality of the circumstance. But what we absolutely must do, there are 10 to 15,000 American citizens stuck. They were told to shelter in place in a war zone, which to me is just ludicrous. But, trying to just suspend the past there for a moment, we have to focus all our energies, all our attention in getting our citizens out. And in my way of thinking, our allegiance is to American citizens first. And so that needs to be our focus, and at least that will be some measure of mitigating this unmitigated disaster in Afghanistan is to get our people out safely and quickly. And that absolutely has to be our focus. After that, I think then we can have a conversation about what comes next. But until that happens, that has to be our sole focus. We've already lost enough credibility abroad. We cannot lose any more credibility at home with our citizens who have put themselves in harm's way on behalf of the United States of America. And if they're abandoned there or worse, I'm afraid that's something that will take generations to overcome, if we can at all.
Amen, Congressman Perry. Thank you so much. You've been so generous with your time and your expertise, and thank you for your service too, sir.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for this opportunity. God bless you. Stay safe, and look forward to the next time we get to chat.
Well, let me ask, where can listeners go to learn more about you, your office, and to stay up to date with what's happening with the evolving situation?
Sure. We have three offices in the district, one in Dauphin County, one in Cumberland County, of course, one in York County. You can find me at Rep. Scott Perry online, and certainly all our numbers are active. If you need to get in touch with me or our staff, just simply call, make an appointment, and we'll be happy to resolve or help to resolve any issue you have.
Well, to stay up to date with what's happening in your state government, go to our website at www.pamanufacturers.org. And to follow Rebecca's work, www.pmta.org. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, Carl. Aside from public education, the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, or PennDOT, is the champion of constantly receiving huge infusions of tax dollars, but always claiming to be underfunded. No matter how much money is pumped into traditional infrastructure, we are perpetually on the cusp of a financial crisis. Under former Governor Tom Corbett, a deal was struck to raise a tax on oil production to secure additional billions, primarily to fix Pennsylvania's roads and bridges, which are in a constant state of disrepair. The impact of that tax, of course, trickled down to consumers, raising the average cost of gasoline by about 30 cents per gallon. That sated the beast for a couple of weeks, and then the drumbeat began for more funding. Blaming fuel economy and the tiny portion of electric-powered vehicles for declining gas tax revenue, Governor Tom Wolf impaneled a Transportation Revenue Options Committee, CROC for short, to devise a new funding scheme. And that they did. According to the Center Square, CROC recommended, quote, a patchwork of taxes and fees on drivers, electric vehicles, and packages delivered by Amazon, UPS, FedEx, and chain grocery stores. It also calls for corridor tolling, surcharges on rideshare services, increased registration fees, and a phase-out of the gasoline tax. After feasting on this smorgasbord of new revenue proposals, Truck then delivered the crowning recommendation, charging each vehicle driven in the state a fee of 8.1 cents per mile. This supposedly would replace the gasoline tax. The end result, $11.4 billion in new revenue to close what PennDOT claims is a $9.3 billion funding cap. The Truck report landed with a thud in the legislature, where Republican leaders declared it dead on arrival. State Representative Jason Ortitai said he would prefer that PennDOT set up a commission to study how they are spending the money that they already receive. Senate Transportation Chairman Wayne Langerhulk said he doesn't believe the agency could spend that much money, even if they got it. These lawmakers have correctly identified the problem. State transportation policy is a dumpster fire. The focus is solely on increasing revenue with no corresponding effort at improving efficiency. Ortitai laments, quote, there is no talk of doing things better, only the need to raise taxes and fees. Successive governors and legislatures have taken a piecemeal approach to the state's transportation needs, acting only to plug holes or respond to crises or near-crisis situations. There has been no focus on comprehensive long-range planning. And the problem is not limited to PennDOT. For 15 years, travelers on the Pennsylvania Turnpike have been paying steep annual fare increases due to a botched plan to toll Interstate 80 and divert the revenue to PennDOT. Federal law prevented the tolling of the interstate, But the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission was stuck with shoveling $450 million per year to PennDOT with no corresponding revenue source. The end result is the Turnpike is now one of, if not the, most expensive toll road in the world. Starting next year, the Turnpike's payment to PennDOT will drop to $50 million. However, Turnpike officials say annual toll hikes will continue until at least 2050 as the commission addresses unmet needs. That, of course, blows a $400 million hole in PennDOT's budget, which will give the agency yet another talking point as it presses the legislature for new and increased funding. All eyes are now on the federal government as Congress works to pass a massive new infrastructure bill. However, the term infrastructure has been redefined from the traditional understanding of roads, bridges, airports, and railroads to include a wide range of social programs that will dilute the funding that trickles down to the states for traditional infrastructure. Federal action aside, it is clear that it is well past time for Pennsylvania to take a wide-ranging and systemic look at our transportation infrastructure policy. The Band-Aid approach, coupled with bureaucratic pressures for ever-increasing revenue, have ironically left us with no clear roadmap for addressing the state's current and future needs. State transportation policy cries out for executive leadership, but with the Wolf administration distracted by the COVID-19 pandemic and its general incompetence, this is not likely to happen. Hopefully, the next governor will be able to work with the legislature to finally put Pennsylvania's transportation systems on the right track. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WEXC-FM and WGRP-AM in Greenville, along with WTKT-AM in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.
Thank you.